Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture, man, children. I know there's a man in the title, but this isn't a manosphere, maniverse.
Manosphere.
No, that's what they call like those like people who like listen to Joe Rogan and like Theo Von and like these young guys who like listen to podcasts and get radicalized against women. That's not us. This is I'm just a soy boy, so if you're down with my soy ways, then you could stick around. If not, this is not the podcast for you.
Soy boy.
I'm just a soy boy, and I'm here today with Nadia Cater, who's gender fluid, so that must very much anger you.
Yeah, listen to my gender fluidity through the airwaves.
Yes, can you feel it? Can you feel the fluidity? I heard a joke the other day, and I'm not taking credit for it. Also, I don't know if it's offensive or not, but somebody said I'm gender vapor. That's funny, right? That's not offensive.
Like that.
It's
I
just
like
we're
that.
just which is it's just an elements joke, or matter joke.
Yeah, I don't think it's offensive. I think
Yeah.
it's a nerd. It's basically a
It's a nerd joke. Yeah, it's a nerd joke. I'm gender plasma. So today me and Nadia are here to discuss Companion from this year, 2025. Very different from last week's film, The New York Ripper, which is a film about violence towards women. And this is a movie about women doing violence. Refreshing.
So here's a question that I feel like there's no way we could solve it.
Yes.
But is Iris a woman because she was designed to look like a woman? Does she see herself as a woman because other people perceive her as an attractive woman?
That's very interesting. I
Because she's
think
a robot.
she definitely is treated like a woman in her spaces, in her life. The not one of the one of the non-robot characters, a female named Kat, says, about her boyfriend, he doesn't think of me as a person. He fucks me when he wants, I wear what he wants, I eat what he wants, I show up when he wants. And she's an actual human. So I think,
That really bummed me out, I gotta say.
yes. But in general, I think this movie has a very like, I mean, it's a horror movie, and oh, is it a horror movie? Yeah, I'd say it's a horror movie. It's a violent movie for fucking sure. It had a really good teaser trailer that was just very like, it was a little bit of this dinner scene at the end. But it was very just like, what the hell is this? But then the second trailer gave away its surprise. So I went into the movie knowing the surprise. Did you, or were you actually surprised?
No, I knew it because I was actually, what surprised me was that the movie wanted you to be surprised because I was like, it's already in the trailer.
Right, the trailer fucked it. Yeah, the surprise is that the companion, the main character, Iris, played by Sophie Thatcher, is a robot, a companion robot. Yeah, the trailer gave it away, but the movie does make it a big reveal, which I guess the best way to see this movie would have been to just go in completely blind. But even without that, it's still, I think, a very good movie.
I think it still works without the surprise. Like, I feel like if you knew, I think a more interesting surprise would be when Iris finds out that she's a robot. She didn't know.
You know what surprise actually really got me? Patrick.
Oh, he was too beautiful. I mean,
Yeah, really?
part
I was totally shocked by that.
of me, look, I nothing on that actor. Oh man, what's his name? Harvey Guillen, something like that.
Yeah.
He's a compelling
Guillermo
actor.
from What We Do in the Shadows.
He's a compelling actor and
Yeah.
he is an attractive guy, but I generalize in the gay community that someone that looks like Patrick would not be dating someone that looks like Harvey Guillen. Just and how fawning he was about him. I was like,
Wow, I'm a dummy because when in this movie, the person who controls the robot or owns the robot, they can shut them down by saying just their name and go to sleep. And there's a point where they're arguing. We'll get into it, but there's like a crime and they want to steal this money and they're like, oh, let's split it three ways. And then What's Harvey? What's his character?
Eli.
Eli. Eli's like, don't you mean four ways? And they're like, no, three ways. And then they're like, we're not gonna give him a share. He's not even a real person. And then he goes, Patrick, go to sleep. And then when you do that, their eyes sort of turn white. And I was shocked. I was like, whoa, I did not see it coming. It got me so good. But it was fun. It's good to be got. I was like, whoa, that was so cool. Like, it makes sense after, right? But I didn't see it coming at all, man.
I just feel like I've known enough, and I'm not saying all gay men are like this, but I've known enough superficial gay men who are very attractive
Sure.
of like, you're in this culture, so you're going to be the hot guy. You're going to be with other hot guys. So like, and but like, I mean, I think Eli is really cute, but it's
Yeah.
also like, come on. Also, Patrick was perfect. He was gorgeous and he cooked and he was
Yes.
a wonderful like guest. I was like, this guy's too
Perfect.
amazing all around. Yeah, because I feel like I was like expecting Patrick to be either bitchy or dumb or something, and he just seemed to have it all, and I was like,
Yeah.
you ain't real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like all the human characters had very obvious flaws,
Yeah.
except Patrick.
Oh yes, that's true. That's true. I'm dumb. All right, so this movie was written directed by Drew Hancock, who hasn't done a ton else. The cinematographer was Eli Bourne. It begins with Iris. Iris is often dressed in sort of like a cute little bob and very like 50s kind of clothing. She's like walking in a grocery store, which I completely didn't realize until I think I saw it on IMDb that that's such a huge homage to the end of The Stepford Wives, which is that's how that movie ends with her going into the.
Yeah. She also always wears headbands that I feel like is very old fashioned too.
Yes, she's got like a out of time feel to her. We see like the beginning is her in the supermarket and she meets Jack Quaid, who we talked about in our Tragedy Girls episode. He's got Quaid face. I actually want to talk about his Quaid face today because I've been
Okay.
thinking a lot about it and how it works cinematically. Jack Quaid is Josh, and we see their meet cute. He sees her and she sees him, and they're attracted to each other. And then he walks over to try to talk to her, but he accidentally knocks over all these oranges and they go everywhere. And he kind of fumbles to pick them up, and then they both start laughing, and then they sort of meet, and that's their meet cute. But I wrote down her monologue, which is going through this whole scene, and it's what starts the movie. Most of the time, it's like there's this thick black cloud covering everything. It's like we see the world, but we don't really see the world, you know? We're all just stumbling around, directionless, no sense of meaning, no sense of purpose. I know that might sound super depressing, but honestly, I think it's a good thing because it makes us appreciate the other times, those brief, transient moments when, or is it transient or transcendent? Transcendent moments when the lights flicker on, the black clouds part, and you see the world for what it really is. And suddenly there is meaning. Suddenly there is purpose. And if you're lucky, you'll experience this once in your life. For me, it happened twice. The first was the day I met Josh, and the second, the day I killed him. And then it cuts to the credits. And the credits are like on this sort of like pink background where there's like blood splashing. It's such a cool opening. Because that's all we're hearing that as the meet cute happened.
It's also very like hyper feminine, those colors, and that you wouldn't associate necessarily with that violence. And she says, "I killed him," as in like, okay, clearly not an accident or anything, right? And you're like, what's gonna happen? It's a great opening.
And it's a big and as per her speech, it's like this transformative moment for her. It's really fascinating.
Well, I think it also ties back to that Stepford Wives. Like, it's like in the movie starts where the Stepford Wives end, so it's kind of like
Wow, yeah,
so
kinda,
this
yeah.
yeah. So the Stepford Wives is about a woman who very like over the course of like loses all of her identity outside of being a wife and mother and
Yeah.
her agency, whereas this person starts off with no agency and no sense of self outside of being the girlfriend of this amazing guy and
Wow.
then slowly becomes a real person.
The Stepford Wives is about a woman becoming a robot, and Companion is about a robot becoming a woman.
Yeah, it's that's
As
fun. I like that.
wait, so I'm getting old grad school now. That makes me think of Simone de Beauvoir, right? Didn't she say, I'm gonna get the quote wrong, but didn't she say, like, female is always becoming woman? Like, she thinks she was talking about performativity, like, you're always playing as woman. I might be totally wrong about that quote. I'm pretty sure that was Simone de Beauvoir.
I mean, you're probably right. I didn't read enough of her to remember
Me
anything.
neither. I think I just know the stupid quote from probably some secondary source. Like, all my Moby Dick knowledge and Shakespeare knowledge comes from Star Trek movies. Yeah. It is, you know, now that we're thinking, right? Now that we're riffing intellectually, this movie actually would make a good companion piece with Barbie.
Oh,
Because
okay.
that's a movie about a woman. I mean, that's about a doll becoming a woman, or somebody who is imaginary version of a woman becoming a real woman, right? Because if you remember, Barbie ends with her going into a gynecologist's office and making an appointment.
That
Maybe
was
she's
really
grown a
funny.
vagina now.
She was really excited about that
Yeah.
too.
Yeah.
When I was thinking of this movie, and not, I really wasn't trying to make a pun of companion, but I couldn't think of another word. But I was thinking of like Ex Machina,
Oh, yes.
and I have not seen that movie since. I could be wrong, but I think I saw it with you in the theaters, and I was like blown away by it. And thinking
Yeah,
about,
maybe. I don't remember. Yes.
yeah.
I certainly remember talking to you about it when it came out.
Yeah.
It definitely go it has almost the exact same what do you call it? Oh my God, my brain is not working today. What happens after the climax? Denouement?
I
What's
think.
my
I
God.
don't know.
What do you what's like the end? What? I'm gonna Google what happens after climax and it's gonna say something dirty.
Yeah, I honestly I'm just getting like sex stuff when I try to Google it, so.
What do you call the end of a book after the climax?
I think it is denouement, the act of untying. Huh.
Denouement, yeah. All right. I was
Yeah,
right.
you're right. You're good.
It has the same. I'm not cutting any of this out. It has the same denouement as Ex Machina of her putting on clothes that she gets from the closet and going out into the real world now with part of her robot body showing and her feeling okay and proud of that. I mean, exact same. It's the exact same ending.
Man. Oh, okay. Wow. I didn't even think about that. I was just, but now that you're saying it, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Still all also fun. I think like what's funny though is like the Stepford Wives is like such a 70s downer of a movie.
Yes.
And Ex Machina, I think it, well, it has its really fun, it has like a few funny moments to it, but it still has like a lot of darkness. Where this one is dark, but like a dark comedy. It's like a
Oh,
horror. It's
yeah.
almost like, well, it's not, maybe not a comedy, but it's,
It's
it
got
has a,
comedy. It's got a lot of comedy in it. There's a lot
it,
of genuine just jokes in it.
so it takes like a lighter side to things. Like I feel like it's,
Yeah.
it, you'd probably watch those downer movies first and then watch this movie to perk you up.
Yeah. So I think this also relates to the novel Tomorrow's Eve, which is something that I read in grad school. Have you ever heard of Tomorrow's Eve?
No, tell me about it.
It's a French novel from 1886. I can never say the title. I can never say the author's name. It's like Auguste Vallée de l'Isle-Adam. The sort of chestnut thing is that it's famous because it coins the term android. Comes from this book. But this book is crazy. It's about a guy who falls in love with a woman, but he hates her entire personality, which means that's not love. But he goes to his friend, this is true, Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison is in this book as a character. So he goes and he has like this underground, like weird bat cave, like or like Dexter's laboratory. Because remember, like when he creates the phonograph, people are like, it's a talking machine. He can recreate sentience. So the character goes to his friend Thomas Edison, named Thomas Edison, and says, oh, I've got this problem. I'm in love with this woman, but I actually hate her, but I just like her body. Can you help me out? So I think he kills, I forget who kills her, but basically they replace her with a automaton, an android that looks exactly like her. This is, I think, the earliest this trope or this type of story happens. But then you see it in things like the 80s movie Weird Science, where the two nerd guys create a woman using the power of a computer and lightning.
I mean, you even see in Metropolis, they create
Yes.
they create a beautiful woman out of a robot. It that
Video
yeah.
for Bad Romance, the Lady
Oh.
Gaga video. She's sort of an android in that, and like they're all bidding on her at some point.
Whoa. Okay.
Anyway, let's get back to this motion picture. We get the sense that it's like the future because we hear Jack Quaid, Josh say, "Iris, wake up," and she wakes up and she's in a car, and then we see he is like in the driver's seat, but he's like looking at an iPad or some kind of tablet, and you realize the car is self-driving. So it's like, oh, okay, this is some time in the future. And they're like going away for the weekend to like this friend's cabin, but they get there and it's like this gigantic, beautiful mansion. That's another thing like Ex Machina, that it's this huge, beautiful, rich person mansion in the woods.
Yeah, completely isolated from society.
Yeah. The car talks to them. When they get there, the car's like, "You have arrived." And Iris says, "Thanks, Josh's car," which is like one of the things later on, like you could look back as a clue. She's nervous about going in. She's afraid she's going to embarrass herself. She thinks that his friend Kat doesn't like her. He says, "Come on, Iris, tell me the truth. You know you can't lie to me," which is another clue because later on we find out that literally they're programmed, they can't lie. Also, his pet name for her is Beep Boop.
That's a diabolical
When
nickname.
you know what it means, but it sounds cute. Beep boop.
He's such a dick. He's an awful person. Just
Yeah. Well, all right.
unraveled over
Let's talk
time.
about Quaid face right now. So we were talking about when we talked about Tragic Girls, we were talking about how he's such like a victim in that movie. And but then in Scream 5, he is the nice doting boyfriend, but then we find out he's the killer, which is similar to this. And I think what it is his father is Dennis Quaid and his mother is Meg Ryan. And I think in our cultural cinematic consciousness, Dennis Quaid is like this masculine or this masculinity, and Meg Ryan is this cute innocence. And I think he looks like a combination of his parents. So I think we can read into his face both, and I'll equate masculinity to danger. We read into his face both something innocent and something dangerous, and that's part of his
Interesting.
appeal.
I would say he's a great villain. I do kind of worry that he might be typecast, but I think
Yeah,
he's really good at it.
but he don't he don't he doesn't look like a villain though, right? He's believable as a villain, but when you see him, you would be like, oh yeah, that's the villain. He does look like this average kind of like guy.
Well, he would be like the red herring villain or like the new age misogynist. Like the new what do you call those, like, that stereotype of the guys that are like live in their basements on the computer all the time playing like Warcraft and
Neckbeards?
neckbeards? Yeah, he
Well, he's,
kind of reads
yeah.
me as a neckbeard.
He's also kind of like that post Me Too, I'm a nice guy thing. I mean, literally at one point in the movie, he says to her, "I'm a nice guy," like kind of trying to, skirt any responsibility for his actions.
Yeah, though I mean he was in the he is the most recent movie that he was in is called Novocaine, which I haven't seen, but he's not the villain in that. So he's
He's
a
in My Adventures with Superman, which is like this Superman anime that's out, and his voice is perfect as Superman Clark Kent. It's like he's so good as Superman. So
Oh.
there's that side of him too. So the house that they go to is well, we meet the friend Kat, who's played by Megan Suri, who y'all might know from Never Have I Ever. Did you ever watch that? Never Have I Ever?
No, I haven't.
It's a Netflix show, Mindy Kaling show. And her boyfriend who owns the house is this guy named Sergey, and he has this thick Russian accent, and he's kind of depicted as foreign and swarthy, and you're kind of like, I don't, you're kind of not meant to trust this guy immediately when you see him.
I feel like he's the most stereotypical 80s Russian villain. Like, he has a mullet and a
Yes.
thick mustache.
Yeah.
He has that thick accent too, and also he has all the, like, later on in the movie, he has all this Stalin shit in his room.
Yes,
Like,
yes. And
well,
yeah. And when
the
we
safe. The safe code, and the girlfriend is like, the code to the safe is Stalin's birthday, like all his past codes.
It's Stalin's birthday.
It's insane, absolutely insane.
And when we first meet him, he very aggressively like eyes Iris up and down, like completely. That's one of the interesting themes in this movie is some people treat companions as people, like Eli kind of does. We'll get into that because it's not really, but Eli kind of does. But then Sergei completely sees her as an object.
Well, I think that also speaks to the misogyny. And like the
Yes.
whole movie's about misogyny
Yes.
because they treat Patrick like a person up until it matters with the
Yes, that's
money.
true.
But everyone's very well, Kat like kind of sees Iris as a threat. Sergei sees her as an object, and Eli is kind of like dismissively polite to her. Like she's not really important, you know? So it's interesting because Eli is like the most likable human per well outside of Patrick, and then you find out Patrick and a human. But it kind of the movie almost posits that the robots are better people than the people. Sorry, I didn't mean to take that away
No,
from you.
it's all good. IMDb called this a clue, but I just call this contemporary filmmaking. Iris is taking a shower, but after the shower, she still has full makeup and lipstick. Like, yes, that's a clue, but also all movies do
All the
that.
time.
Oh, so they have dinner made by Patrick. And at dinner, Patrick tells the group of the story of how he met Eli. He was at a Halloween party, and Patrick stepped on Eli's dinosaur tail. He's just as a dinosaur. And then Eli took the dinosaur hat off or face off, whatever. And he said, I realized I was looking at the most beautiful man I've ever seen. And then Josh makes a joke about that. Eli, so Iris then asks, when did you know that Eli was the one? And Patrick says, right then and there. And then she says, there's this piece of you that you didn't even know was broken, and suddenly it's fixed. And you're staring at this stranger, this person you've never met before, and you know that for the rest of your life, you'll do whatever it takes to make them happy. And the rest of the group kind of seems weirded out by her sort of weirdly sincere monologue. Sergei uses this electric wine opener, which comes into play later on. Sergei's talking to Patrick, and Patrick's like, I love being in your house. And he's like, how did you get this, if you don't mind if I ask? And he's like, my work is not very clean. I get my hands very dirty, which is funny because later on, we find out that he's in fact not the criminal that we're told he is. He's a sod farmer, which is funny. I get my hands dirty.
I mean, it sounds so dark, and he's like a sod farming salesman or whatever. Oh my God.
Iris talks to Kat, and Iris like really wants Kat to like her and be her friend. And Iris says to her, like, oh, I think you're so brave. I wish I had your confidence. And she says something like, you don't like me. And then Kat says, you make me feel so replaceable.
Yeah, it's like I have the whole quote if you don't mind. It's not that I don't like you, Iris. It's that I don't like the idea of you. When I look at you, I feel so replaceable. And at this point in the movie, you're not really sure, or if you don't listen to this or watch the trailer, you don't know that Iris is a robot. And it also speaks to like women feeling like they're incompetent or put in a position where they have to be competitive with each other. And Kat is in that position too because she's in and she knows it and she admits it. She's an accessory to Sergei, but she uses him for his money. And then it's like, oh, like what can I do? Or, she doesn't say this, but you could think it of like, well, what's the point in me then if he could just buy one and make the woman that he wants? It's very depressing, like
But what's
thought.
interesting is Iris's attraction to her, that independence. She says about Kat, I wasn't built that way. Something inside me feels like it's holding me back, which we find out later is, when she says, I wasn't built this way. But at the time, you think she just means like it's just, she's just using figurative language. They have
Well,
a
I
little.
think she thinks it's figurative language, but it's literal.
We do we so we find out later on that these companion robots don't know they're robots. That's sort of part of it. They believe that they are real people.
that are in love with
Yeah,
the
they're in
so
love with.
that's also the thing is like you create a love link
Right.
as part of the starting and reading the user agreement
Right, right,
of your
right.
sex bot. That man, have you, I don't mean for this to get too dark, but have you known like women in abusive relationships, like emotionally abusive? Because
Yeah.
everything Iris talks about Josh, I've seen that in real life, with people I've known in the past, and it was that kind of like really was jarring to me to see that in a robot, because the robot is also, I mean, if we look at like the ethics of it, they're made to believe that they're people, that they
Yeah.
feel love, but they're treated like objects.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's fucked
really,
up.
it's fucked up. The whole thing is like fucked up because even the later on the technicians that bring the robots to the people,
Yeah.
like they are so out of it. Like they
Yeah.
are so what do you call it? They like dead
Indifferent.
to in well, indifferent, but also more like a it's almost like a form of protection in a weird
Well,
way.
they're
It's
like
like
Apple geniuses, you know what I mean? They're like tech guys. They come in, they, you know, they don't, they completely see them as like a, you know, hardware for them to fix and work on.
well, I also saw it as like they had to, because they talk to these bots almost like they're
Yeah.
people, but then they have to keep that distance because they know what they're used for and how they're abused. Like even at the end, when
Yes.
the two techs are talking, they're like, "Oh, this is really, you don't see the fucked up shit these people do to these things. Like they shoot
Yeah.
at them, they drag them with their cars. Like why do they do anything?
They
It's
lock them in basements and torture them. It's
yeah."
very dark.
It's kind of like there's a word for it when you're so distant, you like kind of disassociate from like because it's a part of your role. What is that term?
I don't know, but can I tell you what it made me think of?
Okay.
There's this, have you ever heard the concept of the empathy circle?
No, tell me about it.
It's something that comes up a lot with vegetarians, or vegans. An empathy, supposedly every person has an empathy circle, right? And everyone's empathy circle is different, you know, but everyone has one. So like a per someone's empathy circle might be, I care about what happens to my brother, my sister, my mother, my father, but I don't care what happens to someone in another country, right? The circle, inside the circle is who they have empathy for, and outside the circle, they don't. It doesn't mean that they hate them or want bad things to happen to them. It just means they don't have empathy. They are not feeling with them. They're not feeling for them. Vegetarians have slightly bigger circles because they put animals in the circle, right? It's very easy for even the most moral, nice people to eat meat and never sort of close that cognitive dissonance of I'm eating an animal that may have been tortured and it's the manufacturer of whatever. But then this movie brings up this concept of AI, which they never used the term AI in this, but it is AI. And it made me think of this concept of like, are we gonna have a point where like we have, you know, our circles expand and we do have artificial intelligences in our circle. Like in Star Wars, one of the big differences you see between the good guys and the bad guys are the bad guys treat droids just as slaves, whereas like the good guys treat them as friends.
Okay, interesting. I took it like I took the text as almost like a medical kind of detachment or apathy of
Maybe.
like I have to put this wall up because I have to deal with people doing the most depraved things
Oh, well,
to
that's like a
these.
real doctor or nurse.
Yeah, that's what I took it as. Like the technicians are more like, yeah, they do these fucked up things to
Yeah.
this and this is just part of the job.
Even in my work, which is human and social services, I care greatly for the people that I work with, but I also have the, you know, maybe robotic ability to switch it off when I'm off the clock. Otherwise, I'd lose my mind. You know, you
Yeah.
have to learn that.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't tell you this, but a couple weeks ago, I toured a prison as part of my job.
Wow.
So we did this. So I do like training. So we were given a tour of a prison in Santa Fe, that's like an hour from where I live. because just to get an idea of like what facility and education's like.
Mm.
So the tour took so long though, and the way it was scheduled, that we didn't actually get to see any teaching, but
Okay.
we met with a few learners, you know, who are incarcerated people,
Yeah.
and also interacted with two different levels. So in media, they call it like solitary, of like people by themselves. Where I'm from, they call it, in the facility, in the language of administration, they called it level fours or level sixes. So they have different levels. So we interacted with level two people, which are, they can go in and out of different rooms. They could go to the library and pick stuff out. They could go to a classroom. The level fours are, and this was a men's facility, they're in their cells for 23 hours a day by
Wow.
themselves. And they opened the cells so that we could, two of the cells at one at a time, so we could talk to these two guys who are incarcerated about their experience with independent learning, because they give them these iPads and they do like educational software on them. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I was so removed from this reality, because we've never seen, like, we don't interact with these prisoners.
It's completely
And
out of our empathy circle. We don't think
it,
about prisoners.
you don't think about it, but like, that's a reality of like, these guys spent 23, and whatever they've done, I don't know, and I'm
Right.
not gonna ever ask, but there was something so disturbing about it. And on the wall, so that it was like, we were in this like building, and there's like a wall with like a television screen and some like lunch tables. And then to the far right, there was these cells, that there was like a interior, there was like a almost like a circular like watchtower kind of thing above us, and they would radio to the tower to open the cell door so the guy would come out. And on the wall, there was a menu of what they're given to eat, and they're given to eat almost the same things every single day. And it was just like breakfast, this amount, one patty, one juice box, one coffee, one. And like, it was like that, and like every day. And there was just something so profoundly disturbing about it. And I was like, oh, because I'm so detached from this reality, it actually severely affected me when it was forced upon me. And it's something about that too, with these like these robots, because if you thought about how they're programmed in this movie to feel love and empathy, and also react physically to physical pain, like they're programmed to feel that, to make them feel realistic, and then how they're treated is profoundly disturbing, and grossly upsetting. Yeah, and that kind of detachment from the human beings too. Whoa, man, it was rough. So like, I'm really
That sounds really rough.
grateful that the movie had these comedic parts in it, because it would have been so much darker.
It's such a heavy, these are such heavy ideas.
Yeah. So we were getting to like the first scene of where Kat and Iris interact with each other, and it goes really negatively. And then everyone starts dancing, and Iris is like trying to get Josh to dance, and he's kind of not into it, or he doesn't care. And she's just trying to like enjoy herself, and she's dancing with Patrick and Eli, and then it just like immediately cuts to Josh having an orgasm on top of her, and then rolling off her and falling asleep.
And she doesn't look like she was really engaged with the sex at all. She doesn't look like she was pleasured at all. And then,
It was also very like, he was like, ugh! And then just like immediately falls asleep, and she's like looking at him like he's like the love of her
Lovingly.
life. Oh God.
And she's like, I'm so glad we did this. I'm so glad you brought me here. And he just says, Iris, go to sleep, which we know later on is like a command. Like he literally shuts her off. The next day, we see that in his like bag or his luggage or whatever, he's got this like little flash drive. And they're gonna go down and like spend some time by the lake and have breakfast. But then he's like, oh, I'm not feeling good. Just go without me. And we see he slips something into her pocket. And she's wearing this very cute, like pink shorts, like pink checkered shirt, and pink, like headband. Very sort of like out of time, but like cutesy. So she goes down to the lake and she's just looking at the water. And then Sergey comes and he's being sort of like weird and lascivious. And then he's like, hey, can you put lotion on my back, and she's like, oh, okay. And then he grabs her hand, and he's like starts to pull her towards him, and he's like, it's okay, Kat gave me permission. And she's like, I don't want
This
this.
is what you're built for, is
Yes,
what he
this is
says
what
to
you're
her.
built for. And he tries to he just grabs her. We don't see what happens until later. We next see them all, the other people all sitting inside talking, and then she sort of just she walks she's walking in and she walks into like the foreground. We see her hand in the foreground, and everyone's like, holy shit. And then we see a close-up of her, and she's just got blood all over her face. And the thing that was slipped into her pocket was a knife. We then see flashback of like he tried to rape her, and she killed him. She killed Sergei.
He's also, it's like 8 in the morning or something, or eight, and he right before he tries to assault her, he's holding like a bottle of vodka. It's like the most bizarre kind of it. The movie like really wants you to think he's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a good guy, but I don't know. I guess I wonder about who is really the evil here, you know? Because it's also like I'm not standing up for this guy at all. But he treats her like an object and very much of like, this is what you're built for. You're basically a sex doll. Whereas like Josh has her believe that he is the love of her life and doesn't like physically assault her, but basically he has her in this like emotional like
Well, her whole
abusive.
life is gaslighting. Her whole existence is gaslighting. He's gaslit her into believing she exists and has a memory of a life before even meeting him, which is all implanted.
And later on, when she sees he has a control panel of her, it shows that he has her intelligence really low.
Down to 40%,
It's
which is
fucked
very fa it's fascinating. It's so smart. She says something crazy when they're all like, oh my God, Iris, what did you do? She says, because at some point he's choking her before Sergei's choking her before she kills him. And she says that if Sergei killed her, it would take her away from Josh, and that hurts more than the pain of being choked. So like every she's there, she's so single-minded about like her devotion to Josh. Josh says, go to sleep, and her eyes turn white. And for those of you who haven't seen the trailer, this would be a big reveal moment for you that she's an android. Oh, she's a companion, sex doll, fuck doll. They call them a bunch of different things. Fuck bot. We hear hum when she's out, we hear humming in her head, which I think implies that she dreams. And there's also earlier on they talk about dreaming. When she wakes up, he says, like, oh, were you dreaming? Which makes me think of, Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? She is they're like, okay, we have to shut her down and call the cops. So Josh says to Eli and Kat, can you just give me a moment alone with her? I want to say goodbye to her. And she's tied to a chair, and we learn that she can't lie because it's against her program. And he says, I just gotta tell you, just gotta rip the bandaid off, you're a robot. And then he goes, well, I hate the word fuck bot, but he says it. She kind of goes by Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics, which are, number one, a robot may not injure a human being, or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey the orders given by a human, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And the third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So she kind of follows those rules. But as you said, we learn that his we they call them phones, but they look like big tablets. That on his phone, he can control her everything, her eye color, her hair color, her voice, the language she speaks, how smart she is, how strong she is, everything. He completely has, and like he you see like on his phone, it's like an app. Like he could just like move the bar this way or that. Like he just drags his finger and he makes her smarter or whatever. She's like, but I have memories. I've been to Japan twice. I had a childhood. And he's like, no, those are just implanted. And she's like, but what about when we met with the oranges? And he's like, yeah, that didn't happen. I actually just picked that from a drop-down menu of meet cutes. It could have been anything, but that was the one I picked. And then he goes, do you want to know how we really met? And then we see a flashback of him just like in his apartment, and these guys come and drop her off and teach him how to use her. And they're like, yeah, when you turn her on, you've got to do a love link with her. She's got to fall in love with you. If you want to reset her, press behind her ear for 5 seconds. He does the love link. She has the idea of, she has the experience, I guess, of the meet cute. And then her eyes turn human because they're black at that point. And she sees him and she's like, hey, you. And then they're together. And then immediately he goes and fucks her because that's the whole point.
That's like while he's waiting for her to reboot, he's like picking his toenails like in the
He's
living
just a
room. It's like,
gross asshole, yeah.
yeah, they make it like as gross and like unromantic as possible. Like he's in his boxers just
Yeah.
while these guys come in with this
Yeah.
shit. It's really gross.
We find out from one of the technicians that delivers her that I guess in this world laws have been passed and they're not allowed to make companions that could be too smart or too strong. And they're not allowed to hurt anyone or lie to anyone. So what we find out is the little flash drive that he had was a way of hacking into her system and being able to get to settings that you don't normally have access to.
Access.
And Eli goes, you jailbroke your sex bot. And that's what it is. It's like jailbreaking your phone. He jailbroke her and made it so and turned her aggression all the way up and her strength up and took away the thing that would inhibit her from killing. The whole plan we now find out is they want to steal Sergey's money. It's a plan that he has with Kat. The first time I watched the movie, I thought that they were a couple, but the second time I realized they're not. I think he likes her, but she's just his friend. They're just,
I think I think he's really into her, but and she's repulsed by him, but uses him to get what she wants.
Yes, because she lies and says Sergey's a bad guy. He's a drug dealer and a gun and arms dealer, and we shouldn't feel bad about stealing his money. And then we find out that's not true. He's a sob farmer.
She that's the what makes that worse actually was like she was like, I didn't lie to you. You just assumed he was in the mafia and I did not correct you. And it was like, oh my God. Like she's so manipulative and hateful. And she actually looks a lot like someone I used to know who is not that manipulative but could be. And that also kind of threw me off of like the realness here was a little much.
I think she's a really interesting character, Kat, because she's sort of a bad guy, but you could read her as being akin to Iris. Maybe she's just trying to get away. It's kind of like we talked about Ex Machina before. That movie, I think, is a challenging movie because in that movie, the android manipulates the protagonist into developing feelings for her, and then she doesn't kill him, but she locks him away where he'll just starve to death, and she goes out into the world. And some people see the ending as, oh my God, what a cruel ending. She's evil. But then some people are like, no, she's a slave, and she used this guy to get a crush on her to get away from slavery. It's very challenging that way. There's also when he's telling her she's not real, there's this very sort of real pathetic, she's freaking out, and she's like, okay, I'm not real, but I'm still yours. We could go home right now and go back to normal life. She so is programmed to be obsessed with him that she's like, we could still do this.
Which is that in itself is upsetting because the whole plan was to blame the murder on her so they could steal his money. So he was, and he fucks her one last time essentially to just throw her to the wolves. There's that. There's a real coldness there.
Bringing up the empathy circle concept, he does see her. Obviously, he's a shitty partner, right? But he does see her as alive, right? Because when he's saying goodbye to her, Kat walks in and she's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm just saying goodbye to her." And she's like, "Why are you saying goodbye to her? She's a thing. She's like the sock you jerk off in." And he's like, "No, don't call her that. She's not a sock." And you realize he does see Iris as quote unquote real in some way.
Yeah, but not an
Not
equal in
enough.
any way.
No, not an equal in any way. But real. But it also makes me think men want to believe that women love them. It's like the ultimate male gaze thing. They're beautiful and they want you. So Iris runs away. She escapes. She knows that they're going to turn her off, so she runs away. She runs into the woods. She steals Josh's phone. Josh lets Eli in on the plan. That's when he says, "Oh my God, you jailbroke your fuckbot." They say, "Okay," they let Eli in, and they're like, "Okay, you could be part of the plan now." This is where they have the thing where they're like, "Should it be three ways or four ways?" And then we find out that Patrick's also a companion. There's a gun in Sergei's safe, so now we have a gun introduced to the story. At one point, they're like, "Look, we know you really like Patrick. You know, God knows you could have traded him in for a newer model." And Eli's, "Are you robo shaming me?" And there's this, well, okay, we'll get to it in a minute. But they decide to all go out and try to find her. She is playing with the phone, and she turns her intelligence up to 100, which the technician early on says 100 kind of equals like a Harvard graduate, like nothing super, but very smart. When she sees that she was on 40%, she disappointedly goes, "Wow, Josh." Which is so amazing to think about, like, he's such a little man, he keeps her at 40%. You know what I mean? Like, he could keep her at zero and just use her as like a doll, but he makes it 40 instead of 40. It's just weird. She then, now that she's a, there's this moment when she puts herself up to 100, we hear this sort of ethereal music, and it fades to white, and it's almost like she's being reborn because she's smart now, and she starts imagining these different scenarios of how she might try to run away and how they might work out or not work out, which sort of implies that she now can think through something and think of its consequences. She uses the phone to get to Josh's car. Oh, we learned something really interesting, which is Eli is with Patrick and they're looking for Iris. And at one point, he starts talking about how like Iris is a robot and blah blah blah. And Patrick's like, "Hey, I know I'm a robot." And he's like, "How do you know?" And he's like, "I pieced it together over the last couple of years," which is really interesting because the movie never gets into why that's possible, but there seems to be some implication that they're evolving in some way.
I also wondered the timeline, because I wonder if Patrick figured out, because he's been with Eli for so long that he could learn over time, where usually these bots, because they're treated as
Oh, maybe.
disposable,
Yeah. Maybe.
they're,
Yeah.
you know, you get a new model, like a new
Yeah.
phone every like 2 years or
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Eli says to Patrick, "I love you." He goes, "Fuck you, Dad. I'm in love with a robot." And like, it's interesting because it's obviously not a true free relationship because one has complete power over the other. But you get the sense that Eli and Patrick are connected in a way that Iris and Josh aren't. Not that Eli is like this great guy, but at this moment when Patrick says, "Yeah, I know I'm a robot," and like there are no more secrets between them, it seems like it's going to be this next point in their relationship.
I actually wondered if that also had to do with gender. Because the like I said a little earlier, the cast treats Patrick differently, even though technically he's a fuckbot like
Yeah.
Iris is. So I
Yeah.
wondered if that had to do with gender, of like they're kind of, because they're both male,
Right.
they're seen a little more equal footing than Josh and Iris, where Iris is just his
Right.
sex bot, you
That's
know?
interesting. That might be very true. So Eli tells Patrick he loves him, and then he says, "Can you feel how much I love you? And how does it feel?" And then Patrick says this really interesting line. He says, "I don't know how to describe something like that. It feels like pain, like the inside of my body is on fire and it's angry and violent and bright." What did you think of that line? Because I don't know how to interpret it. I see it as kind of two different ways, and I don't, but I'm interested in how you read that line.
I read it as really intense, and I couldn't tell if it was like almost like Patrick wants to kind of break away from his programming but can't, or is it that the way that they're designed is that they have to be all consuming about this other person,
Yes. Yeah.
and being all consuming kind of counteracts with that I'm learning over time
Yeah.
thing. Like maybe they're not, because they're not designed to be with someone for such a long time, there's something that changes there, which I think is a common, is actually a common theme in this movie, of like the how the technology, which wasn't designed, which was designed for one purpose but has been manipulated and changed
Yeah.
to suit the needs of whoever's using it.
Right.
Because I think about like just in general the sex box obviously, but also Josh's car and how Iris manipulates the car
Yeah. Oh,
to,
yeah.
and the phone too. Like she manipulates her own voice so that the voice activation works. When Eli dies, Josh flips him over and takes his phone and has him on dead Eli's face so that he can use Patrick and
Wow,
reboot him.
yeah.
Yeah, so like the self-driving car, even Iris manipulates her own programming of like I can't lie, so she thinks of a way to get around that, which is changing her language to
Yeah.
German so that the person she's interacting with doesn't even know
Right.
that
Very
she's,
funny scene.
yeah, funny and dark at the same time.
Right. She runs away with Josh's car, but Josh reports it is stolen, so the car stops driving and she gets out. And she gets pulled over by a cop, and she changes her own language to German, which is very smart because he's like, "Do you speak English?" And she's speaking in German, but you see the subtitles like, "Yes, I speak English, but I chose to speak in German because I know you don't speak it, and I can't lie to you." It's very funny. Well, at one point, there's something really funny line where, going back to you, was about that line. I had the exact same feeling of you. I didn't. The two ways that you are wondering is the same with me. I couldn't figure out if it meant that they do have this all-encompassing obsession, or that burning, angry feeling is actually something inside them revolting, or trying to break away from that bullshit programming. Either is interesting, but I am interested in this idea of like they are evolving. They're doing things that they weren't programmed to do, and acting in ways that are surprising. At one point, Josh, when she's in the car, Josh calls her and he's like, "Hey, I'm sorry, beep boop. We can still be together. Why don't you come back and we could work this out. We could go home." And then she goes, "I really love you, but you controlled me and had me murder someone. It's really hard to come back from that. I don't think it's gonna work out." And he's like, "Are you fucking breaking up with me?" And she's like, "No, Josh, it's not you, it's me." Which is so funny because she still loves him, but she knows that she's programmed to love him, but she's deciding to not be with him. It also made me think, that whole concept made me think about how abuse really works. How you can be attracted to or attached to someone who hurts you, and it takes a lot of growing and therapy and time and sort of reprogramming to get over that. Like, if you ever see like those like documentaries about people in cults, and like they're out of the cult, but they'll still talk fondly about it because there's the programming still in there.
And they have good feelings and
Yeah.
relationships. And there was quote unquote good times.
Yeah.
Though I think in this case it was all programmed memories, not
Yeah.
anything really
Right.
great about him or
Right,
stuff they
right.
did together.
Josh jailbreaks Patrick and basically just turns him into a Terminator. He puts violence all the way up, intelligence down, aggression all the way up, allows him to be violent. When she's talking to the cop in German, we see him like walking towards her in the background, and he just takes the cop and like just beats his face off. It's just brutal. And then turns her off and brings her back to the house.
He also walks like the Terminator too,
Yeah.
almost like
He just
just
becomes
like,
this violent automaton.
yeah.
Patrick drives the cop car back to the house. Kat decides, like, fuck it. This is, wait, there's a dead cop now. She just wants to take her half of the money and leave. Oh, we forgot to say Eli dies. At some point, Eli tries to kill her, kill Iris. And he said, he funnily, he's like, "Don't, it's not personal, girl. You know I'm an ally." But they struggle with the gun and she shoots him and Eli dies. So anyway, Kat's like, "I'm gonna leave." This is when she tells him he's not really in the mafia, you just assume that. And then Josh says to Kat, "This is the perfect representation of every woman in my fucking life. They use me, and when things get a little tough, they abandon me." So he's very like, boo-hoo me, I'm a victim, when clearly he's a piece of shit. Kat's gonna leave. And Josh goes, "Patrick, stop Kat from leaving." which I guess he wants Patrick to just grab her, but Patrick goes up to her with a knife and stabs her, and Kat is like fatally wounded, and he starts talking to her. Josh starts talking, and she's like, "Could you just for 1 second shut the fuck up?" And then she goes and slowly like sits on the couch, and she sits next to Iris's body, but Iris is turned off. And she just like slowly just looks out the window, and she's like, "Oh, it's gonna rain," and then dies. And it's usually because in that moment they juxtapose her really hard with Iris. She's dying. She's next to Iris. They're both on the couch. And earlier on, we find out this trick that if you ask Iris what the weather is, she gives you a perfect weather report. Which in the beginning, before they reveal it, makes it sound like it's a cute thing that she like read it. So he goes, "Iris, what's the weather?" And she tells him exactly what it is, and he's like, "Ah, I never get sick of that." But it's just a function that they have. Now we get to sort of like the final part. This is just a short, but it's only like a 90-minute movie. Patrick, like you said, Patrick makes, sorry, not Patrick, Josh, while turning Patrick into like this Terminator, makes him love link with him. So Patrick now is like in love with him. So Iris wakes up and she's been redressed and she's in different clothes and she's handcuffed or tied to a chair. And there's this dinner table with like a candle and like a beautiful dinner and wine. And Josh is on the other side of the table. And Patrick made it for them. Patrick made them their meal. She says, "Fuck you." She tells Josh, "I just wanted to live." And he goes, you know, he's talking about like whether she's alive. He's like, "Do you think your life is more important than Eli's?" Josh says, "You are the cause for all of this." And then she says, "No, Josh, your greed caused this." And then Josh says, "This is all, I want to read this all because it's just such good dialogue." Josh says, "You don't get to do this. You don't get to sit there and judge me. You have no fucking clue what it's like out here. The world, everything, it's just a big fucking game. And I'm sorry, but it's rigged against people like me. I'm a good guy. I'm decent. And I do what I have to. Oh, well, sorry, what do I have to show for it? A cramped one-bedroom apartment and a robot girlfriend. I don't even own you, for Christ's sakes. You're a fucking rental. And you know me, Iris. You know me better than anyone. And you know that I deserve so much more than this." She says, "You're right. I do know you. I know everything about you. I know you take almond milk in your coffee. I know you like your bed sheets untucked. I know your favorite hobbies are bar trivia, video games, and prattling on endlessly about everything the universe owes you. I know that you always need to be in control. I know that you have a below average sized penis. And I know that you think having a few million dollars will disguise the fact that you are just a sad, bitter, weak human being." Awesome. Beautiful scene. Incredible. Icon. Josh turns her intelligence all the way down to zero. And very sadistically, he says, "You know, earlier when you were tied up, you said that you know what pain feels like. Why don't we test that?" And he tells her to put her hand out straight, and he puts the candle under her hand, and it's burning her hand. And we see that she feels pain. She's crying and like kind of shaking, but she can't move her hand. And the plastic starts to burn off her hand, and you see the metal underneath it. The company that makes the companions are called Empathics. They call and he's like, "Oh my," he like puts on a voice and he's like, "Oh my God, thank God. You gotta come and get her. You know, she killed all these people. I don't know what's wrong, blah, blah, blah." Her arm is set on fire. Josh says to Patrick, "Give her a gun." He tells her, "Put the gun to your head and shoot yourself." But in a really amazing moment, she's going to pull the trigger and she hesitates, which again is one of these things where I'm like, they're evolving. Like, even though she should completely just do what he says and shoot herself, she hesitates and tries to stop it. But she does it anyway, and she shoots herself in the head and, is destroyed. The guys come, and Patrick is dressed like a cop. We learn that they're gonna he they they're buying the whole story, and they're gonna like the two technicians are gonna like bring her away. And he's like, "Yeah, anyway, when we bring her back to, the lab, we'll just scrub her memory and check for any issues." And he's like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, everything that a companion sees is recorded." And he's like, "Oh, but how can you get that if she blew her head off?" And he's like, "Oh well, her brain's not really in her head. It's actually up there, is just sort of Wi-Fi and stuff. Her torso is where her main operation is, and her torso is totally fine. So we could totally get all the information out of her." And he's like, "Oh, okay." And that's when the two guys go out to the car. They have that conversation of like, The younger guy on the case is like, "Do you believe that?" And the older guy's like, "Oh no, he jailbroke her. This guy's totally fucked." And that's what they talk about. Why do they do that? Why do they torture them? Whatever. And then they see Patrick, and Patrick kills them or tries to kill them. The younger guy runs away. Patrick's gonna kill the younger guy, but then Iris, who's rebooted, she was being rebooted in the van. She comes out with like a cattle prod and tries to stop Patrick. And then she says to Patrick, Patrick sees the dead body of Eli out there. And she says, "Remember Eli? He's the one you really love. You don't really love Josh. He's using you." And then she says, "Remember love? It feels like pain, like the inside of your body's on fire." And then Patrick, sort of his like, you see his memory of when he meets Eli, but then you see the same memory and it's Josh underneath the dinosaur costume and it's flipping back and forth. And then he's like, "Oh yeah, I do love Eli." And then he kills himself. He takes the cattle prod and puts it under his chin and electric shoots himself and kills himself.
Yeah, that was dark, man.
Yeah. It's
But
still amazing, right? What's happening to that movement? Are they evolving? Like what? Like is like you know? You said it's because it could be because he's been around for a longer amount of time. But even that, if that's true, they're still doing things that are beyond their programming.
I don't know. It was fascinating. I like the part when Iris tells him what love is, and she's just like, "And you know, Patrick, I can't lie to you." It's like
Yeah,
she's using
yes.
her own programming to, I mean, she's essentially manipulating Patrick,
Yeah.
but for her own
Right.
survival. But it's again that sort of use of like, what's the loophole in this technology to use it to my benefit?
Yeah.
Which is a common theme. Yeah, so she finds the younger lab technician. And she's like, I need you to do something.
Right. She then comes inside and Josh is there and she starts talking to Josh in all these different voices, the voices of everyone else. And she says the technician from Empathics gave her total self-control. So she's like, and he's like, "Why'd you come back here?" And she's like, "I came back here to tell you that you have no control over me anymore." And she shoots at him and he goes, "Oh my God, you almost shot me." And she goes, "I know, I feel terrible about it." And then she smiles and she goes, "Look at that, my very first lie." But this is when it gets, again, this is dark, but I think it ends triumphantly. He tells her, "You know what? You won't hurt me, whether you have total independence or not. You love me too much." And then he starts like beating her, and this is pretty triggering, right? It looks like domestic abuse. He starts hitting her and pushing her around.
And he seems to enjoy it. That's like the
Yes,
sick
right.
part.
Josh says, "I don't need a gun to control you. I'm part of you. You think I'm nothing? I'm everything to you." He gets on top of her and says, "I want to hear you say it. I want to hear you say I'm everything to you." And he says, "Say it. I don't care if it's a lie." So she says it. He points a gun at her torso like he's going to kill her. And then she says, "Go to sleep, Josh." And she hits him in the side of the head with the electronic wine opener, which fucking drills a hole into his fucking head. And he falls down dead. And it's awesome.
It takes out part a little brain matter
Yeah,
too.
it's fantastic. And then we hear the same voiceover from the beginning about, you know, all that stuff about life and having meaning and the great moments in your life. She takes the money and leaves. We see her taking a shower and she rips the like melted flesh off her hand and she has like the Luke Skywalker like robot hand and she sort of like is playing with it and likes it. She takes all the money. She's the only one left with the money and she leaves and she drives away. And as she's driving away, she sees in another car a guy and a woman who looks exactly like her, but with blonde hair. And she waves at her with the robot hand. And the other woman's like, "Huh." And that's the end of the movie.
She's also like part of that monologue. She changes her clothes, and she's
Yeah.
not wearing those like cutesy feminine outfits.
Yes.
She's wearing like a leather jacket and
Yeah.
pants. So it's kind of like her. That's her taking her agency.
Yeah. Yeah, despite this movie's darkness, I think it has a really great ending. You know, I think it has a triumphant ending. You know, it's the ending that you Severed Wives had. You know, Severed Wives has that very downer ending of the villains win and our protagonist is basically killed and replaced. And in this,
Can you think of a 70s sci-fi movie though that doesn't have a downer ending?
yeah.
Because I cannot.
Well, that's the thing, right? You've got the Cold War and Vietnam and, you know, the assassinations of all those peace respectful people. Like they say, like the it's never sci-fi is never about the future. It's really always about the exact moment where it's made.
Right. Yeah, and I think this movie Companion is very much of like this is a time where women really need to have agency and take agency. I think it's great. I love this movie.
Me too. It's very much like it's like the Stepford Wives for the post Me Too world. And I don't want to talk about Me Too in a cliche way because obviously it didn't. The world did change, but it also didn't change. A lot of the structural inequalities that are built into the system are still there. It's not like we're cured from it, but it was a huge turning point, at least in terms of consciousness. And I think that's what you see. Like, what she reveals is that Josh isn't this nice guy. He gets off on manipulation. He feels like the world owes him something because he's pathetic, and he turns around and tries to turns that into control.
I also think that's why he never put her intelligence to zero. It's like he needed to feel like he was important and smarter than
Well, it's like he
her.
says at the end where he says, "I don't care if you lie to me, just say it." He just say that I mean the world to you. So have you seen, do you watch Black Mirror?
I've watched a couple of episodes, but I haven't kept up with it.
Did you see what episode is it? It's from season 4, the USS Callister. People refer to it as the Star Trek episode.
No, I didn't see that one.
It's really good. I would suggest you see it. It's another thing that could kind of be a companion to this. It's about this game designer who's like this sort of sad nerdy guy, and even in his own company, like the CEO treats him like shit, and like you kind of feel empathy for him. And he created this virtual reality video game that's like very, very realistic when you're in it. And he steal he has there's this girl who works at his company that he finds attractive, and he steals her DNA from like a coffee cup, and he's able to like recreate her in the game through her DNA. And he makes that version of her like a slave. And he was like inspired by a very Star Trek coded show. So in his game, he's like the Captain Kirk, and they all have to like play along like he's the captain in this fantasy. And she keeps trying to like run away. But he does things like when she's resistant, he does things like remove her mouth so she feels like she's choking. He says, like, "I could keep you like this forever. An eternity of you choking for air." It's very disturbing. But again, it's that thing of like, I'm a nice guy. I'm the one who deserves empathy. I'm not a big scary guy, but they're just as evil too.
Oh man, that's dark.
Yeah, I would check it out. I'm not a, by the way, a fan. Not that I'm against it. But I'm not an avid watcher of Black Mirror. But after I watched the original Star Trek, I went back and wanted to see that episode. And it's really interesting.
I'll definitely check it out. I feel like just in general, Black Mirror just felt very cynical
Sure, yeah.
and I that's why I was like, the world is awful enough. I don't need my entertainment to be awful. But absolutely.
Interesting, because you do like horror, though.
Horror's not always cynical. I mean, it could get
That's
dark.
true. It's not always cynical. That's correct. Yeah, no, you're right. It may be dark and violent, but not always cynical.
There's something about I mean, there's a difference between like scary or dark stuff and then something of like everything is terrible and it's always going to be terrible and it'll never get better.
Yes.
Those are two different things, and I feel like there's only so much of the second I could deal with in a lifetime.
Yeah. Jen is a huge fan of Handmaid's Tale. She's read both books. She loves the series. And she's always like, "Oh, you should watch it." And I know that it's amazing, but it's everything I know about it seems like such a bummer. I kind of don't want to go into that headspace, even though I know it's probably incredible. So in some way, I understand that kind of thing. Like, but Jen loves it, and she feels those feelings, but like I guess that's part of it. I think that there's, at least in the second book, there's a sort of happy ending for the Handmaids, after a lot of torture and bullshit. Like you do. Did you read anything about this second season of Star Wars Andor?
No, I haven't.
So there was a bit of a controversy, which is there's an episode where There's this female character who's like, she's a migrant on this planet. So she's sort of like an undocumented person. And an Imperial officer tries to rape her. And she even says the word rape. She says, "He tried to rape me," which is the first time the word rape was used in Star Wars. And it's also the first time sexual assault was depicted in Star Wars. And some people were like, "This is too much for Star Wars. Sexual assault doesn't fit in the world of Star Wars." Some people, like myself, thought it was amazing that it did that. And why not let Star Wars deal with all sorts of human issues? And then there's the people that are conservative and feel like Star Wars is too woke, so they don't like that. But I mean, if there was an empire, of course sexual violence would be happening. Like, they're the evil empire. What do you, I don't know. This has been an uplifting episode of PCMC. We've told you the whole story of Companion, but you know what? I knew a lot of it when I went into two, and it's still fantastic. And it's funnier than we sort of told you about. It's very funny. There's a lot of jokes, great performances, good music. It's a zippy 90 minutes. I love a 90 minute film. I love a 90 minute film and like a 300 page novel. Anything more than that, I don't need it. Fuck Infinite Jest.
God, we hate that book.
I'm never gonna read it. I tried listening to an audiobook of it once, and even the audiobook, I was like, fuck you, you're trying to not make me understand you. What is that book? It's like a, and no one even knows what it's about. People know how many pages it is. It's like about like a tennis player or something. Ah, fuck off. This has been PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. Hey, if you love Infinite Jest, good. Come on to the show. I'd love to hear what it's about. I would love that. I want one person in this world to just give me a quick summary of what Infinite Jest is fucking about. Anyway, Nadia, it's always a supreme pleasure to have you on the show.
I always love being here. This is so much fun. Thank you for having me.
We love you here, and we might be hearing from you again quite soon. We're quickly approaching the 400th episode of PCMC, and we've got some exciting things up our sleeves for that. And perhaps you'll be involved in those festivities. Perhaps.
Perhaps.
We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.